The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello, party people. Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lynn Ozawi.
All right, Dope Village. We have got a great one for you because we have hockey superstars Kendall Coyne Schofield and Hillary Knight talking about the new professional women's hockey league, the PWHL.
I think you probably feel the same way. I'm such a huge fan of Kendall and Hillary. And this conversation, I actually got chills at certain points during it, listening to them tell the story of this league. And what they have done is nothing short of remarkable.
It truly is. Because as you will hear, these women put in the work. Kendall is considered one of the fastest skaters in the history of the sport. As a member of the U.S. women's national team, she, of course, won a gold medal at the 2018 Winter Olympics. And as a collegiate player at Northeastern University, she was awarded the Patty Kazmaier Award, which goes to the top female college hockey player. Kendall is also a color commentator for NHL games and a player development coach for the Chicago Blackhawks. She plays for the PWHL Minnesota team, and Hillary is considered one of the sharpest shooters in the history of the sport. I have literally seen it firsthand. I should really say first face, because I was on my face on the ice when I saw it. And alongside Kendall, that's for another day, alongside Kendall, she won gold at the 2018 Olympics. She also won two national championships at the University of Wisconsin. And Hillary is also an analyst for ESPN's coverage of the NHL, and she plays for PWHL Boston team. What you're about to hear is how Kendall and Hillary took this dream of a women's professional hockey league as they, the players, collectively envisioned it and made it a reality. Boom! So get comfortable listening. It's Kendall and Hillary. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. We're smiling so bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling all right, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
Hi, pumpkins. I've missed you.
We
likewise.
We need to clear something up real quick before we even move on to setting the scene. How can there be three of the four top teams as Canadians? This cannot be.
I know.
Are we recording?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is live. This is part of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Get this Canadians out of there.
It hurts my soul.
Same. I was like, I just checked the recent ones, and I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, we're trying.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's crazy is when we were talking about, you know, just the ideation of everything and adding nuances to rules, and then when you look at just the awarded for points for wins and overtimes and all that, you realize it you know, people can start to pull away pretty quickly, so. Yeah. It's kind of fun, but also not if you're on the wrong side of it.
But you know how pro sports goes, like the highs are so high and the lows are so low. It's like trying to find that happy medium, which is really
interesting.
Hard.
Yeah, of course.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Highs are highs, lows are lows.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I was on the bottom of that table a lot with our professional soccer league. I was like, I hate this league. I hate it. I don't want to be on the bottom. This sucks. I worked my whole life for this goddamn league and now I hate it.
I literally was. I was so mad.
Sounds like us, Hill.
Yep, it does.
Since I'm like,
are you available via text all the time?
Since we're tight on time, and Hillary, you got to run to do a clinic, little love. And Kendall's going to stay on a little longer, but we'll move it. So set the scene. Where are you two at? What you're doing? You're in separate locations, of course, separate teams.
Yeah, how'd that work out, Kendall? Gosh.
Yeah, come on. You guys got this league off the ground. Couldn't you have at least put yourselves on the same team together?
I know, right? No, I think that was what was kind of sad was you realize like you can't just play with your friends all the time anymore. And you're like, wait a second, we fought for this.
We're going to write in the bylaws that one team is everyone we want it to be. Thanks.
I'm in Massachusetts at Andover Academy right now, about to drop some pucks for Learn to Play.
Nice.
And I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
This is where I live and play during the season. But Chicago will always be home, so I will go there as soon as the season is over.
Oh, good. You two have been at this, and we've had you on the pod before a very long time. We've talked about the history of women's ice hockey and your fight for equal pay with the national team and all of that good stuff. But the other fight that we haven't talked as much about, and we will talk about today, is you wanting a professional women's league. And not just wanting a league, but your league. How you envisioned it, how you wanted it, how you thought it out. And that's what I've loved about all of this journey, getting a front row seat to it, knowing you guys and Johnny Langle, of course, and Billie Jean and Alana and all the people that made this happen, is how hard you've worked. It's so amazing. So can you take us back to the beginning on what got you thinking? We don't just want a professional league. We want our professional league.
It came from a need, right? And I think it came from the strength of what we accomplished, you know, many years ago, understanding that, you know, it's not going to be given to us. And it's something that we need to build, and we need to take responsibility and ownership of how we want to see the future of the sport and shape it. And, you know, it's leaving the sport better than you found it in a way, but it really came from a need of not having a place to play, not being treated professionally, and understanding what our value was and what level of value we can add to sports landscape, not just women's sports specifically, but just sports in general. And so, you know, that's sort of a thematic way that it came about. But, you know, Kendall, if you want to get more in the weeds.
Yeah, I just think like over the last so many years, like we've seen each other, whether it's at Women's Sports Foundation events, ESPNW events, and have listened to so many incredible speakers, including both of you. And just over the years, everyone's like, what's the status? Like, where's women's hockey? And it was always a question that was posed with so much conflict, so much confusion, and, you know, so much adversity, where it was like, we always knew what we wanted. We always knew what we deserved. We always had the vision. And now we're seeing that. And it's been so many years of trying to answer those questions to people. Well, so what's your job? And you're trying to say, I play hockey. Oh, well, who pays your salary? Well, let me get, I don't know yet. Like, you know, just like,
we're working on that. All right.
We're working on that. Okay. Like, just give me some time. But we were running out of time. The game deserved this for so long. The generations of players who came before Hillary and I deserved this, and they didn't have that. Like, this has been so long overdue. And I think the one thing that remained so constant in this build was the unity of the players and the vision of the players. And that was our strength. We knew that this was possible. You're seeing buildings 20,000 plus sell out in minutes, and people are like, whoa, like, this is amazing. And I think if you ask any one of the players, we think it's amazing, but we know it's expected. That's what we deserve. That we've earned that. We know this product is awesome. We've been trying to tell people it's awesome for years and years and years, but we've never been provided with the proper infrastructure and resources and support and financial backing to put the game on the proper
reach.
platform. And now we're finally getting there. And the thing that I love, one of the things I love too is, you know, everyone's talking about how great the product is. We've always known how great the product is.
But yeah, no shit, you say? No kidding.
But it's getting even better and better because you know what? Players wake up every day being hockey players. They're not a teacher by day and a hockey player by night. They wake up and they're a hockey player. They eat like a professional athlete. They sleep like a professional athlete. Well, they should. They're being provided two meals. So I know they're eating like a professional athlete. I don't know when they sleep, but they can sleep. And, you know, they train like a professional athlete. They have the athletic trainers. They have the doctors. They have the strength coaches. They have the support system around them to be their best day in and day out.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'd love for the two of you to give some context of what previous attempts were at, and I'm going to use air quotes, professional leagues.
Semi-pro.
As far as what the conditions were like, I've heard you speak on that over the years, such as things like showers, not having showers, team buses. Mm-hmm. To understand where you're at now, can you take us back to where you had been at certain points in this journey?
It's so stark of a contrast of where we've come from to where we are now. You know, not even having enough areas in a dressing room for people to get dressed, you know, carrying all your stuff in for the game, you know, plugging in a heat pack to the community lobby outlet to get your muscles ready before a game, sitting with your hockey bag, not having bathrooms on the bus, not having healthcare. I mean, it's sort of like, where do you begin of where the stark contrast was? It's nothing what now looks like. And I think that's a testament to, as Kendall said, all the players that are willing to, you know, get a collection of us together and really stand up for what we want to see the future of the game and create this vision, and actually having it come to life while we're able to play in it is pretty special. But yeah, there's some horror stories, right? And that's just, there's many horror stories even before our time. And so it's really a full circle moment of, this is a great step forward for professional women's ice hockey. And I'm encouraged and continue to be excited about all the growth that we knew was there and where the sport can go with the right encouragement, the right investment, and the right structure for people to be treated professionally and perform professionally and continue to do that night in, night out, whatever city we're in.
The crazy thing is, though, it could have been really easy for you guys to be like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to play in this, you know, semi-pro league. We're going to put up with it. We're going to, you know, just accept that we're not there yet, and which is what a lot of people have done for many years in a lot of different sports with women's sports, as we know. And yet you all were never content. No, we're not settling for that. It was, so the fact that you were able to get hundreds mm-hmm. of the best players from US and Canada globally?
Yeah, originally.
Beyond US and Canada to say, nope, not good enough. And we're not just going to sit here and say it's not good enough. We're actually going to go and spring into action mm-hmm. from hiring, Deloitte came on, right, with Billie Jean. Yeah. And Alana, can you give that backstory? Because that's the thing I don't think people who are outside of hockey understand in terms of the dedication you have to making this happen.
Well, just quickly, and Kendall, I'll let you kind of sound off on this, but Fouty, you're the reason why we are here where we are today. A big part of it.
Seriously.
You know, if we didn't connect, if you didn't connect with the Twins, if we were never steered into John Langle's direction.
And John Langle, for context, is, because we haven't established who John Langle is.
John Langle is we called him our tadpole angel on the national team after the Power of One. Johnny was our lawyer on the national team for many years. And then I connected them with Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux, the twins from hockey days of past, not that far past, actually. This is the last Olympics. And then Johnny has been helping them ever since as well. He is an angel.
But if it weren't for the 99ers and everything you guys have done, like, that's what sparked all of this, right? Mm. And I know hockey was trying to push it forward for the longest time, but you were the sort of the domino of us being able to align everything at the right moment, whether that was on the national team, and then that strength carried into the pro landscape. And that's when, you know, Kendall and I can put our heads together and be like, okay, we've done this before in a different iteration. We can do this now on this front. And granted, it took a wild adventure, but that all started from you.
Not me. 99ers.
But yeah.
a very collective effort.
You and your group.
Thank you. Yeah.
And this isn't scripted, but Julie, do you remember what I said to you when we were at the Women's Sports Foundation event this past year? When we were getting our hair and makeup done?
Yeah.
I said it all started with you and your group.
Yeah.
The exact same thing Hillary said. And it's true. And I've said the same to Monique and Jocelyn. Jocelyn was the treasurer of the PWHPA, which is the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association, the association we formed in 2019 with the vision and the goal to create the league that we are playing in. Jocelyn was a big part of that. And I've said to her many times, this without the call that, you know, she made to John, that has stemmed from this. We've lived on the shoulders of each other. We're building on the shoulders of each other. And it's just, it's been one thing after the next. And I think it's important to, if you want to make history, you have to know history. And I think it's so important to know, I think, when it started, where it started. And you talk about Billie Jean and Alana, and obviously they came before your powerful group of the 99ers and what the opportunities they created for all of us, you know, on this podcast today. And so when it came to trying to figure out the landscape, obviously, you know, I've texted you today a couple questions. Hey, I need some help. What do you think here? And, you know, so we're always annoying you, and I apologize, but you're always...
Never apologize.
You know, we're trying to learn from those who came before us. And so when trying to think about, okay, we want a women's professional hockey league we're very proud of, that we can be professional. Because to go back to Lynn, your question to Hillary earlier, you know, the second you walk across that stage as an NCAA athlete, you know, Hillary won a bunch of national championships. I was lucky to play in one NCAA game, which was really cool. Got her butt kicked, but it was awesome. You walk across that stage and you kind of look left and look right and you're like, all right, let's fill out the job applications. And that's not one as a professional athlete, I'll tell you that much. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, that needs to change. And when you think about what existed, when you're asking, like, how did you get players together? And some people may just say, this is good enough. I think the way that a lot of us looked at it was, it can't get any worse, right? Mm-hmm. What do we have to lose? We go back to where we're at of working a full-time job, playing hockey at night, you know, calling ourselves professional athletes, but not being treated as so. You know, what's the worst that can happen? We're in the same boat as we're in right now. So, and I think for a lot of us too, you look at the generations of kids that come up to us and say, I want to be like you. I want to be a professional athlete. It was impossible for me to look them back in the eye and say, yes, I want you to be this, because I absolutely wouldn't wish this upon anyone.
Interesting.
If they want to be a really, truly a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was, you know, constantly in the back of our head of, you know, what our vision was, where we needed to go, where we were. And so a phone call was made to Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss of, you know, you guys have done it. You guys have done it more than anybody. You've created these opportunities that a lot of us have to date. I would say the pinnacle of a lot of our careers was, you know, trying to get a scholarship, go play college hockey, get an education. And that's what you were striving for as a youth hockey player for so many years. And yes, you have a goal to go to the Olympics, but that's every 4 years. And that's one of 21 players up until 2014 and 23 players from, you know, 2018 on. And so really the realistic goal was like trying to get a scholarship to play college hockey, to get an education. But then after that, there wasn't much of a vision. Right. And so, you know, we call Alana, we call Billy, you know, and ask them for their advice. How do you do this? And I will say, I never dreamed that one phone call would turn into 1 million phone calls.
On the bus, too.
Yes.
Oh, plus, wait, your first call to her was on the bus?
Speaker
with everyone?
No.
Oh, I was going to say that'd be good.
I remember the first time I spoke to Alana and Billie Jean, I was actually at home in Chicago. I was in my younger brother's room trying to look for some peace and quiet in my household of chaos. And I was just, and then I got off the phone and my parents were asking me who I was on the phone with. And I told them and they're like, wait, what? What about? And I was like, oh, it's a long story. Don't worry about it. Because it's just, that was for so long. It's just so hard to explain in one sentence. And everyone always asking, well, where are you guys at? It's like, I can't explain it in like 30 seconds. I don't have an elevator speech for you. We're working on it. Like,
it's really hard, okay? Just know that.
Do you remember what year that call was with Billie Jean King and Alana?
2019.
Yeah. I thought you called him right after practice ended on the way to Worlds. The first, or maybe that was, yeah, I can't remember who.
So the first call was, I think it was right around March 17th, 2019. Not right around, it was.
Right around. Yeah. maybe. Around 8:32 a.m. on March 17th.
Yeah. Like you have to also, everything folded, right? Like everything was going away. We were
talking about
CWHL collapsed. We were going to the World Championships. And so really the initial conversation with Alana and Billie Jean was, this is where we're at. Like, what is your recommendation? You know, there's no book. I can't go to the bookstore and say, how do we make women's hockey better? You guys have done it. Like, what do we do? Where do we start? And their recommendation from the beginning was, you need one voice. You need to stick together. You need to have one voice. Mm-hmm. And so through the association, that's how we created that one voice. Yeah. And
that was where you had all the hundreds of players, and they called mm-hmm. it the PWHPA, Professional Women's Hockey Players Association. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was your voice.
We had no idea what we were doing. We're just like, let's get all the players together and then we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, which is not such a bad strategy. You get a bunch of women in a room who care deeply about something, who are smart as hell.
Yeah.
And look what happens. Get some allies. Okay, keep going.
We had to figure out how we were going to provide practice times and games for players and how everything was going to work.
Right, because you're not training with your national teams full time, no. Clearly. And not enough games. This is the first problem to begin with, right? There wasn't enough games to sustain that. So mm-hmm. You're out of college. You need somewhere to be playing.
Yeah, and national team rosters are 23, maybe 25 to 26 right. players with alternates. Like,
yeah.
And we had 100 and maybe just under 200 or just over 200 in the first year, I guess, or first iteration. And then it's like, you know, where do we play? What dates? You know, who's going to run the facility? You know, is there security? Is there insurance? You know, what jerseys are we wearing? What practice jerseys are we wearing? How are we fulfilling equipment needs? I mean, there's so many things that go into just one player on the ice. And we had to figure that out. Obviously, we as in the group, right? The association, how to do it all.
Yeah. How to fund it.
And how to pay for it all.
Yeah.
And we didn't have...
That was the other... We had no money. We didn't even have a bank account when we started, like most, right? That comes with, you know, the association, getting that EIN number and opening the bank account. Gosh. And going back to Ballard Spahr, you think of, you know, starting in 2019, obviously up until now where the league has started, where they're no longer able to represent us. But this whole time... I can't tell you the amount of pro bono work that Ballard Spahr and their team.
John Langle's firm. Yep.
The entire team at Ballard Spahr put in to making this all possible. It would be multiple student loans times 100. I don't even know how to comprehend how much, obviously, time and energy and expertise they put into our group, but on a pro bono basis. Like, we could never repay them literally and figuratively for the amount of work that they put in, which has allowed us to get to where we are today. And I think those people are the unsung heroes of the current structure of the league. I think about all the iterations of leagues, the iterations of teams, cities, players, coaches, staff members that were the volunteers who were happy to be there, happy to support where they can, when they could. We didn't have the finances to support them like they deserve, but they were the stepping stone. They were a huge part of us stepping on the ice every day as a professional hockey player today. That's super important to stress, because there's been so many people, it's impossible to recognize all of them, but
well, you know what I love is that you want to recognize all of them, and you two in particular are so good at that. I will tell you, from the other side, with Johnny, talking to him during all this process, he was like, you would not believe these women, Julie, they amaze me every single damn day because they are rolling up their sleeves. He goes, you know what they're currently doing? They're meeting with Deloitte, going over models of what cities would be, you know, viable, sustainable, what the numbers are, what the data is. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. Yeah, that's what they're doing right now. He's like, think about it. They're so smart. It's like, oh my gosh. So as much as, you know, you need those people that are, to your point, kind of volunteering and helping. I mean, they're there because they recognize what y'all are doing and that you're putting in the work.
What were each of your whys? Because there had to be really hard moments where you thought, is this going to happen? What has kept both of you going?
The little girl, like that, just that, the purest dream of like, I never want anybody to go through this and to this extent of, you know, the semi-pros and the different iterations. I want her to be able to look at us and say, I want to be that someday and be better than that and have no barriers to play and make this a career. So that's what kept, you know, me going. And, you know, I'm sure similar stories for a lot of people, but.
I don't know if it could be said any better, Hillary. Well said. And I think same ditto. And the whole time for me, it was never about playing in this league. I never knew if I'd play in it. That was never the driving force. It was about creating a league that we're so proud of, that young boys and girls can grow up with the same dream. And that's to be a professional hockey player in its simplest form and be treated like one. You guys know, like when you see something, you know it's wrong. And you know, when I would fly into Minnesota, sleep on an air mattress in Hannah Brandt's apartment, go play a game and fly home, and then go back to work on Monday, you know, and then I watch my husband work as a full-time professional athlete in Denver for the Denver Broncos, and it's wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm just as good at my sport as he is at his sport, yet he is provided with the endless amount of opportunities and compensation and resources to be successful. And he'll tell you the same thing. I struggled every single day living that way, not because of how hard it was on us personally, but knowing that the next player who came after me was going to have to live within these struggles as well. And it just, I don't think any of us could continue to wake up and be okay with it. What are we, if we're okay with it, it's never going to change. So this is the group that's needs to change it. Like, it's hard. It's been really, really hard. It's been demanding. It's been a lot of sacrifice. I don't think any of us have gone on vacation in 5 years because we've been, it's been an everyday process. And I mean that, like, seriously. I think I know, like, when Canadian Thanksgiving is and they know when American Thanksgiving is, and we've spent holidays together, and it's, you know, my poor son spent 9 months in the womb listening to contract negotiations. He's going to turn out to be a lawyer.
Drew is going to sure be a lawyer, or else he's going to be like, oh, hell no. I'm not doing that.
It's funny, though. Like, to Kendall's point, people are like, oh, what are your hobbies? Like, you fill out that questionnaire, right? And it's like, this has consumed everything, you know. So
I'm going on a vacation this summer and turning off all my technology.
when you talk of like the whys, it just gives me like chills. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com. The other thing, two things I think of is, one, Billie Jean and Alana, And their gift to women's sports that just continues to give is amazing. I mean, them helping us to then them rolling up their sleeves with you is incredible. And the second part of that is having lived through all that, and now you see this professional hockey league as you envisioned it, and you're walking into these packed stadiums and you're seeing the enthusiasm. I mean, I just saw yesterday or Wednesday, we're recording this on Friday, March 22nd, on March 20th, you know, a game at, where was that? The Bell Center, Montreal, Toronto sold out in 20 minutes, and it's a, you know, an NHL venue. They don't play in this venue typically. 21,000 seats. It sold out in 20 minutes. And this is mid-season. You're coming, you know, it's not a playoff game. It's not a season opener. That excitement has sustained itself, obviously. You know, people often say, oh, well, it's just the season opener, or it's just, you know, this. Well, no, it's sustained itself. So when you're seeing that and you're walking into stadiums, what is that emotion like?
We always knew it. But then for it to actually be real life, it's like the most magical, surreal moment ever. Mm-hmm. And then it's also like, yeah, like we knew it and we told you so kind of thing. But you see the signs, you see the faces. I mean, it just, it gives me goosebumps just like thinking about it, because, you know, it's been a long time coming, yeah. Well overdue. And we have sustained, as you said, sustained success with it.
What's a story you can tell that you did have a goosebump moment? Was it seeing a locker? Was it hitting the ice?
Well, just recently we were in Detroit, the Ottawa-Boston game. And, you know, we're in the huddle
Good
before.
Night.
Yeah.
Go on. Sorry.
We're in the huddle before. And it's just like, you know, I kind of stop because I'm usually barking. And that's why my voice is always gone. And it's like, look up, look at the fans right now. Like, this is incredible. We built this. Like, realize this right now kind of thing. And so then I was like, okay, we got to hurry up and, you know, get ready to go play a hockey game, right? You know, it's a similar feeling to any of the home openers this year. But yeah, it was just this incredible moment again of aha, like we've done it. You know, and I've had so many moments like that this year that it's sort of like a pinch me kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it goes back to the, oh, go ahead, Hillary.
I have to run, so I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Hillary, yeah, go do that clinic. Yay.
I need to work on my edges too.
Who was it for again? You said it was for?
It's a learn to play program with the Boston Bruins and the PWHL Boston team.
And it's for all young kids that are just getting on the ice for the first time?
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Do you remember the time that you taught Julie how to do a slap shot?
And I remember the penguin as well. But we don't have to go in the archives.
We do not have to go to that. We maybe have posted that before.
Bring that photo into the pod.
Yeah.
That's going to resurface.
That will be on social media.
Thanks, Hill. Love you.
Thank you, Hillary.
Love you all. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Hill.
Bye.
Aw.
I was just going to add to that, too. It's like, I know it's cliche, but it's if you build it, they'll come. I think for so long, we've believed this was possible. We knew it was possible, but we didn't have the right leadership, the right resources, the right financial backing to make this come to life. And you look at the leadership behind the league with Mark and Kimbra Walter supporting this financially. You have Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, Royce Cohen, Stan Kasten, and then Jaina Hefford as the operations consultant. You have a group of people that only know professional. That's how they operate their life. That's how they operate each day. So when it comes to this league, all they think about is what's professional. We're going to do this the right way. Just an example, they came to the union and said, any player who has a child under one will be provided a nanny on the road. We'll pay for their flight, we'll pay for their meals, we'll pay for their hotel. That's not in the collective bargaining agreement. They said, but we believe that's the right thing to do. And there's been a lot of things like that over the first year of this is what's right. And going back to the big building, sorry, can you hear Drew? No? Oh, okay.
You're fine. But we love Yeah, and we love baby noises.
And if we can, that's okay. We'll take it.
But going back to the big building, the Bell Center that just sold out, or the incredible game in Detroit, and the milestone game, the marquee games that you've seen just over this past year, there were so many people who have told us, you can't play in big buildings. You guys cannot support big buildings. You know how much it costs to open the concession stand, to turn on the lights. You guys don't belong there. And so I hope there's a lot of people that are seeing what's possible and maybe recognizing, like, hey, maybe I was wrong. Maybe with the right financial support and backing and infrastructure and marketing,
yep,
and this being done the right way, it can be big time. This is big time. This is real. And that's what a lot of people have said to me. It feels different. Mm-hmm. I go, because it is different.
Yeah.
I didn't move my family to Minnesota for funsies. I'm here to win a championship.
I am not sleeping on that air mattress anymore either.
Oh, I want to bring this up with the air mattress. This is one of my favorite things from over the years of working with Julie is, and knowing her, is how many years? And it's about cheddar cheese. That cheddar cheese and not getting it was one of her breaking points with the national team, as far as she kept getting American cheese at the buffet
line.
Did you have a cheddar cheese moment? Was it the air mattress? Was it...
How many years until we can just get cheddar cheese? You're so weird.
Oh, I get it, though. I feel like I have too many cheddar... Can I do all the cheeses? Cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese.
You got blue cheese in there.
Blue cheese.
How many years till I can just get my own charcuterie board?
Pretty much, right? That's what we're going for. We've always had, as Billy says, we've always had crumbs, right? We've always been okay with the crumbs and the crumbs and the crumbs. And it's,
I want,
like,
every damn cheese.
Exactly. Oh, man. Was it? I'm trying to... I don't think there was one specific moment. It was more so just the wave of emotion that I experienced when I graduated college. And you're on this, you know, it's an incredible moment. You just graduated. You're going to miss the environment and the school and your friends and playing college hockey. But it's awesome. You're ready for the next chapter. And then that next chapter just hits you square in the face. And you're like, what is the next chapter? I'm 23 years old in the prime of my career. And for majority of hockey players, that's it. They go get a job and continue to play hockey on the side, and that's it. And that's wrong. I don't know if there was a specific cheese moment. Hillary alluded to it earlier. I think going through the boycott of 2017 also gave me a lot of confidence that we could accomplish anything we set our mind to. I learned so much that year from Ballard Spahr, from the players that came before me, like the Jocelyn and Monique Lamoureux, Megan Duggan, the leaders of that team, you know, of what it meant to stick together, to fight for what you know is right. And I think going through that gave me all of the motivation and confidence that we could accomplish what we set our mind out to in order to create a sustainable professional league. And the other piece that gave me confidence the whole time that we were going to do this was Alana and Billy.
Yeah.
I called them once, and I kept calling them and kept calling them, and they took my call every single time, which I still don't know why, and I still feel so badly about.
Lynn calls Billy the most accessible icon out there.
Yeah.
Amazing, right? And their determination, their commitment, their confidence in this endeavor never changed. Like, they never said, this is impossible. This is impossible. They stuck with this the whole time. Oof. And look at what they've accomplished. And the fact that they were by our side this entire time, I knew we could accomplish it.
Mm. I love them so much.
I think, like, an aha moment for me too, I might have said this before, but was, I think it was 20. Oh, and then I know we were talking about the PWHPA. throw in a global pandemic in the middle of trying to build a women's professional hockey league. Like, that only made things a lot more difficult and delayed things a lot more. Trying to get sponsors, you know, not having people in the building.
That little pandemic that happened in the middle of all that.
Which was very challenging, trying to get players on the ice, safety protocols, which was first and foremost. So all of the laundry list of things that Hillary talked about, in addition to being able to afford those things, then now trying to add in a global pandemic, which I think delayed things of getting this league off the ground and running a little bit sooner. But another like aha moment I had was being at the US Open. And it was just seeing the women's final filled to the brim. Every single ticket sold, every seat filled, just as it was the men's final. Seeing the women's final win the exact same amount of prize money as the men's final. And being there and being with Billie Jean and Alana in that moment. And just looking around being like, this is the empire they built. And just getting so much confidence from that moment, seeing the equal prize money, seeing the equal stadiums filled for both finals, you know, and I think it was just, for me, it was a vision of what's to come and what is possible that, you know, we grew up watching the NHL. I would say a lot of us had our favorite NHL player because that's who we saw. Otherwise, you saw the Olympics every 4 years, and that's really when you saw women's hockey on TV. So my favorite player growing up was Chris Chelios because that's, I watched Chicago Blackhawks. I went to the Blackhawks games. But it was being at the U.S. Open in that moment of like seeing all these people being equally as entertained, equally as excited to watch the women's final as they were the men's final. And the prize money was to follow suit and it was exactly the same. And in my head, why can't we have that in hockey too?
It seems like you've asked that question over the years with other sports as far as I remember you bringing up the WNBA draft. And being like, I want that.
And you got it.
And you got it. Seeing the U.S. Women's National Team have games outside of tournaments, that there's been inspiration from these other leagues.
Oh, yeah. So much inspiration, but also knowledge. You know, when we were negotiating this CBA, you better believe we were asking the NWSL questions, asking the WNBA questions, asking the NHLPA questions. I mean, why not? We have the luxury to be able to learn from the successes of the past and the errors of the past. So, you know, I think knowledge is you know, being power. A sponge, I think, has been knowledge is power and being a sponge is power and just learning and listening and absorbing. And, you know, we know we're not going to get it right. There's going to be mistakes in this first year. If it was perfect, I think it would actually be wrong because then we did something. You know, it's not going to be perfect. That's sports. Sports are imperfect in their most perfect ways, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. I do love your curiosity for that too, and you're such a worker, Kendall, from president of the Players Association to traveling with Drew as a 7-month-old, right, when Michael got brought back up to the Lions. I mean, all these things you're balancing. I do want to ask one question. I mean this with no animosity towards the NHL at all, and I'm saying this out of respect, but do you think that they look at this current league and go, we might have screwed up here. We should have gotten in on that.
I think they're content supporting us the way that they are now as an in-kind partner, whether that's individually with the teams. From a league standpoint, I think that they're okay sitting on the sidelines and watching us do our thing. And I think that's okay. I think there's so much power in the fact that we did this without them. You know, they've been a helping hand if we needed it. They've been a phone call away if we've needed it. They've provided guidance and when it's been asked. But I think people assume that this is subsidized by the NHL, and it's absolutely not. We're standing on our own 2 feet, and I think there's something to be said for that and to be really proud of that.
It is amazing, though, when you see it in women's sports, the power of getting the right people together. And you're seeing it, for example, with like an Angel City in terms of an NWSL taking off, right? The growth from, you know, San Diego Wave coming in. They bought that franchise as an expansion franchise for $2-3 million and just sold it for $120 million in 2 years. You know, I mean, like, we are at this incredible moment for women's sports, and I still think we're only scratching the surface, but you're seeing the domino effect in all these sports, and I'm just so pleased that the reaction has been what it has been, and it's as you say, no surprise.
And we stand on the shoulders of the NWSL, the leagues that came before us, the WNBA, the NWSL, the iterations of the NWSL that I'm not going to start listing letters and trying to say all of them.
WSA. You can do- we'll
go way back.
Yeah, it's just like all of those iterations. And same thing with women's professional hockey. There were iterations of professional hockey that came before the PWHL. And we stand on those shoulders too. So, you know, it's a win-win. So every time we see, you know, the continued success in the NWSL and the WNBA, I mean, you look at like what Caitlin Clark is single-handedly doing. It's amazing. It's literally incredible.
But no, she is not doing as much as you're doing. How many hats are you wearing right now, Kendall? I see like 7.
Mom is the most important. That comes first.
How is that? Like, where you walk into a stadium holding Drew, and I see those pictures, I'm just like, ah.
Yeah, it was a very hard first 2 months for me, for sure. Being six months postpartum, new professional hockey league. Moving to a new city by myself with 2 dogs and a 6-month-old baby, because my husband Michael was on the Detroit Lions at the time and they were still in season. So, you know, I was breastfeeding, trying to manage that, traveling, you know, not having family nearby, but obviously all my teammates were super helpful. But it was, I will say, it's something I will cherish forever, just being able to travel with him. And I think also too, just opening the eyes of my teammates of what's possible. It's another moment of like, oh, I can be a mom and be a hockey player. Yeah. Cause I will tell you, aside from a lot of the people that, you know, didn't think this was possible, there's a whole nother layer of people who don't think having a child and coming back and playing hockey at the highest level is possible. And so I think there's that. That's also something I'm very proud of. It hasn't been easy. It's been hard for sure. But it's so worth it. And honestly, it's made me a better player and person because I hate losing more than I like winning. but when you come home and you see your baby just smiling at you, not caring if you won, not caring if you lost, not caring if you turned the puck over, scored a goal, whatever it may be, he's just so happy to see me. It just puts everything into perspective real quick.
Yeah. And I will say it's amazing for the team and your teammates as well in terms of that perspective. I can remember that with Joy Fawcett's kids and Carla Overbeck. Like, I live with Carla and Jackson, her little son. And just that, like, it's like through osmosis, you have this child effect. It's like, oh, okay, everything's going to be okay. And it creates this wonderful family atmosphere that's so different than anything they've ever been a part of. Is also really special.
For sure. And I will say, without the proper support and infrastructure and financial backing of this league, becoming a mom and continuing to play hockey would have not been in the picture.
Yeah, right.
Because I was provided the opportunity to have a child, to come back, to be a professional hockey player accordingly, as I should, and I was able to do that. And I hope that there's other players who don't feel like they have to make a choice between their hockey career and becoming a mom, because you can have both. And hopefully I'm an example of that. Natalie Spooner on Toronto is an example of that. Brianne Jenner on Ottawa is an example of that. Madison Packer on New York is an example of that. And I apologize if I'm forgetting any other awesome moms in the league, but you know, there's only more to come.
Yeah.
What is your dream of dreams going forward? You've checked some dreams off for the league. What do you see for the future?
I think that's a struggle that I have, is like, never, sometimes it's okay to be satisfied. Like Hillary said, you walk into a rink and like, be okay with like, wow, this is pretty remarkable. Like, we've worked so hard for this moment, like take it all in, but yet don't forget, you got to go win a hockey game and get a job done. So I think for me, I always am like, what's next? What's next? Like, trying to fix this problem, or people have tax questions or CBA questions. And so I'm always like a million miles an hour in different directions. So
amazing.
Like, what's next? I think like a long, I think another pinch me moment will be, I'm not an accountant, by the way, so I defer them to the right people, not me. I think a moment that will be a pinch me moment will be when a player signs a $1 million contract.
Mm. I just got chills.
I know it'll take time, but I know it'll happen.
Mm.
Jules, as you're listening to Kendall and Hillary tell their stories, your heart just going pitter-patter.
Yes. Ugh. The whole time I'm like, oh, yes, I understand that. Yes. Oh my gosh. I was saying to Lynn that so much of watching this unfold has reminded me of our first league, the WUSA, and how much we put our heart and soul into that. I mean, not to the extent you guys have done in terms of getting through all these different iterations, but in terms of just feeling like, no, we want a league that's ours and we're going to put the work in and we're going to figure out what that's going to look like. And that excitement when it does finally, that you have that opening home game and you are selling out and you have all this excitement around it. So, oh, yeah. And just knowing your guys' story. I mean, that's the thing that has been so amazing to watch this journey with you all and how much you've put into it. I mean, I just constantly am in awe because I think people see this shiny object at the end in the league and think, oh, that's great. They got it finally. That's cool. They don't realize just how much work you all as players. I mean, Lynn and I were talking about it before the podcast. Like, what happens to that time when, you know, what if players hadn't risen up and said, okay, no, this isn't good enough. And and when are we going to stop relying on players to do that, right? It shouldn't fall on your shoulders all the time.
Well, I think we finally are there, right? Like, I think now with the backing of this league, the leadership of this league, the investment in this league, a lot of that burden has now been taken off the shoulders of the players. And ultimately, the players get to be players, right? That, you know, the players have been builders for so long, and now the players are able to be players, which is very exciting. And I think sometimes, just as a competitor, you do have to take a step back because, you know, you're in that home opener and you're like, I want to do everything I can to win this hockey game. And then you take a step back being like, wow, how did we get here? Yeah. You know, like, this is amazing that we're finally here. And there has been a lot of sacrifice. I think about my husband, just the amount of phone calls, time away from him.
Yeah.
I remember he was always like an average cook. And I was always an average cook. And then through all of this pro hockey stuff, he kept saying to me, he's like, Kendall, you don't eat. Like, you were on calls from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. and you wouldn't eat a meal. And out of that, he became a really good cook and he cooks all the meals. So not only do we get two meals per the CBA, I get a third from my husband.
You got a hubby who's a chef.
Which is great. But, you know, like I said, we haven't taken vacation. Not that I go on a lot of vacations. I took my honeymoon 2 years delayed. But, you know, it's just like because when I say it's been every day, it really has been every day. Yeah. And, I look at him and think about the amount of hours or distracted days that I've, you know, he's here, but I'm not there because we're just knee deep into this. It's been every day for so long. And so it's reassuring to think that some of that work is going to be off of our shoulders and not on the next generation's shoulders. I think that's the key is, you know, these kids are going to come out of college, they're going to get drafted and, you know, they're going to question what's their salary, where they're going to be living, not what league am I playing in? And what, you know, just all of the millions of questions that we all had that you had, when, you know, you were coming out. And so I think it's important that the players who are coming up, like, recognize and understand the history of where we've come.
For sure.
But I also am proud that they're not going to have to carry the burden, the load that we've carried, because I will say it has sucked some of the love out of the game for some of us, because it's just been such a weight. And I will say this year, I think, like, I have found my love in the sport in a different way for different reasons. But one of those ways is knowing that all this hard work has paid off. And like I said to you before, like it was never for me, it was never about playing in the league, but I've recognized playing in this league has allowed me to love the game so much because I finally feel like the game is loving us back.
Mm. That's a perfect note to end on. I just have such literally genuine, I'm like smiling from ear to ear when I talk to them because there's genuine joy in their success. I'm so happy, given all the work that we've talked about, that this is happening for them. Like, this is real.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah.
Takeaways, Lynn?
My takeaway, I have plural this time around. First off, hearing their why and how clear it was a good reminder for me of how important it is to have that as a guiding force, to always go back to and know why you're doing something, especially during the rough spots.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of a new acronym. A lot of our guests over the years have GTS'd things. They've Googled that shit. In this instance, it was a CBI moment that seems to have started the lightning storm. CBI, of course, meaning call Billy and Alana.
CBI. That's good. There's a lot of people that could benefit from CBI. As we have.
And we, of course, have learned from Billy Jean King to not settle for the crumbs. And now I love that we have a new visual. Get the whole charcuterie board. Get all the cheeses.
I got into this rabbit hole of charcuterie boards on Instagram. I was like, whoa. We had this thing going with my gal Ann at TNT Sports, where we were sending each other these charcuterie boards because I was saying mine would be like bologna, little cheddar cheese from Costco. Anyways, all right, my takeaway, those are good. My takeaway is just that I love that people get to hear the commitment required to get to that dream, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many women's teams in various sports who have wanted to do what this professional women's hockey league is doing, but they didn't have the unity, they didn't have the perseverance that this group did. They stuck together.
Mm.
I mean, they put in that work in so many beautiful ways, from that barnstorming tour. They called it the Dream Gap Tour so that they could actually fill that gap, and whether it was a gap in time or a gap in income, probably both. But they created all this out of sheer determination. And I think that's a great reminder that it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And if you can stick together with a group that you want to grind with, good things always come of that. So I'm just beyond thrilled for them.
I like how you put that, group you want to grind with.
Yeah, I learned that from Des Linden. She said in an interview once, like, if you're running marathons, you want to be grinding with people you want to grind with. Mm. I was like, ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
She's like, the power of like training as a team versus on your own. Mm-hmm. Like, when you can train with a group and you're enjoying it and there's community, like that's all the difference.
It's a good one. Take that.
Dez would be a good one for the pod. Dez, let's go.
Come on, Dez. All right. Are you ready for a question?
I am.
This question is so fitting for this episode, and it comes from Kate Parker, our pal. Kate is a photographer and author who has a new book out called Force of Nature, a celebration of girls and women raising their voices. It has portraits of girls and women and then stories to go along with them. And Kate has a question about raising your voice. She wants to know, curious to...
Wait. Time out, T.O. Can we just first say, before you give me the question, how awesome this book is? Yeah. I have two of them at my house. For the first person who emails Lynn with a really good another question, you can have it. I will send it to you because it is so good. I'm going to gift it to someone. It is so good. I'm keeping one for myself. But like, and she also did that best-selling Strong is the New Pretty series.
Yep.
It's all these women that she's photographed over the years and these gorgeous and strong. It's just so good. So yay, Kate. Okay, sorry.
No, thank you. That was a fantastic interruption. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So Kate would like to know, curious to hear how both of you have had to speak up for yourself or others. What happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've spent, I think, my entire soccer career doing that. That's all we did.
Right.
But it wasn't, it was obviously for me, but it was like the collective we, really.
Mm-hmm.
But we did it as a group. So it helps when you have people around you that are doing it with you, for sure. But that, I think, is really the thing I cherish most about my actual soccer career, is like we had the ability to do something bigger than just stand on top of podiums, is to fight for the sport and for the standards and all of that. So, but the power of being able to do it with a group, obviously, is something that's much easier than on your own, because that can be scary, as we know.
Let's say someone is listening who has no idea what your soccer career was about, what your team did. What is one thing, though, that happened? Because that's the back half of Kate's question. What happened? If you had to sum up what happened because you raised your voice, what would you say?
I think we changed the history of the sport. And so,
hell yeah,
you know, thank God you had the courage to say, okay, this isn't good enough. And I think, you know, too, probably the one time I've had to do it on my own that felt very lonely was when I sat on that Title IX commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to kind of break down Title IX. And that was way back in the early 2000, I think. That was scary because I was the minority voice. And it was also super healthy because it gives you a sense of what people go through when they are the minority voice.
Mm.
And they're not speaking from, you know, a place of confidence or majority. And that was really actually cool to experience all that and have to live through that and understand it a little bit more. And it's scary. It's very scary. But in the end, you walk away going, oh my God, I feel so much better because I'm speaking for people who don't maybe have a platform to speak about this. And that's why you gotta fight for your right to party. I did not intend to go there. I apologize. Go on. When was your experience, Lynn?
Wait, I'm over here laughing. Give me a second, because that just perfectly sums up what we do. We go serious and we find a way to laugh.
Oh, dear.
So my answer to this is a bit of a story. And it goes back to my time working on the documentary series 37 Words, which was a 4-part documentary series about Title IX. And first of all,
watch it if you haven't.
Julie's in it as someone who's interviewed in it, and I was a consulting.
That's not why, but yes, watch it.
I was a consulting story producer on it, and I raised my hand and my voice to be a part of it. And the story continues is that we would have Zooms to talk over storylines, and these Zooms were so dynamic and creative and engaging, where it would be, there were two directors, Don Porter and Nicole Noonan, and just an amazing team of creative minds and people who really cared.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one Zoom where the directors were talking about the idea of having portraits in the series, kind of a common thread throughout the series. And I was like, oh, I have an idea. So I unmuted and I brought up this Annie Leibovitz book that Julie, I had seen at your house that had gorgeous portraits of athletes, including your national team and a portrait of just you doing the most incredible kitty cat sidekick thing. That's a really cool story, but we'll save that for another time. So I thought of that book and Annie Leibovitz, but then I also thought of Kate Parker because I knew her work. So I brought both of them up on the call. The director, Don Porter, said, can you work up an email and send this to us? Kate Parker got hired to take portraits on this film series.
That's awesome. I remember those. They were so incredible, too.
The story continues. Pictures of the directors are now in Kate's new book.
Yeah, and I saw that.
There's a picture of someone else in the book that she took during this documentary series that we talked a lot about in this episode.
Yeah.
Billie Jean King.
The Kinger is in there.
So just kind of this full circle moment of I raised my hand to speak up for myself. I felt really privileged to be able to speak up for Kate. And so to give Kate a shout out on our podcast, you know, means a lot.
Yeah. Great question, Kate. And congrats on the book. So very cool. Get one for all your friends. Force of Nature. The back of it says, hear us roar. It's all these awesome women on the back. All right, before we go, thank you to our presenting sponsor, Ally, for their support, and to Kate Diaz for our theme music, of course. And as always, kids, remember, sing it with us. Laughter permitted.
The little girl. I want her to be able to look at us and say, I want to be that someday.